Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I know we've had what we regard as a few big dogs on before, but I think in terms of names being brought to the table, this is up there this week.
Gamer Club Tennis.
Monaco.
Coventry.
Rangers.
Portsmouth.
Milan, AC Milan,
Hull,
done.
1-0 me. QPR,
Detroit Express, Ross County.
Who've we got, Chris?
Mark Haley.
Good
got,
hair.
In terms of them names, George Weir, we've got in the house this week. Paolo Maldini.
The Pope.
Sinatra.
Frank.
Boris Becker. Senna.
Fucking hell, I forgot about them ones.
We recorded this the same week we did Kenny Miller.
Yeah,
up in Glasgow.
Which is another good episode on Patreon.
Yeah, if you're not already on Patreon, get yourself involved because there's 200 plus episodes on there and like you said, Kenny Miller on.
I've just had Ross McCormack on this morning.
Oh.
Forgot how good that episode was.
And in my opinion, the best podcast we've ever had. Mark Crossley Part 2.
He started putting our podcasts on in his spinning classes.
Have you?
And it's getting 20% out of the...
Oh, my fuck. Let's get him in. Let's get him in. Come on, Mark Haley.
Thing is, January, he's on a diet. I don't know what you're on. So it's been getting a bit
like
ratty.
He looks like he's on a helium diet.
1-0.
always ends up being me, doesn't it?
You know what I mean?
You'll know when I look like fucking young Peter Andre.
Long way ago. I was looking, mate. 1987, 14th in the Ballon d'Or. Is that right?
It's news to me. That's a new one on me.
Is it?
Give
yeah.
over.
We always pull them nuggets
this
out.
Land, never. I've never been one to look. None of that. But
it's on 14th in the Ballon d'Or, I'm getting a T-shirt.
Yeah. It's never impressed me, that sort of stuff. There you
just
go.
Just goals, trophies.
Yeah, just moving forward. Yeah.
I think pound for pound as well, see the CV of people that you've met, played with, played for.
I couldn't say I've got a great story, but Franz Beckenbauer, when I was at, just sad passing there, when I was at Coventry City, played against him. We went over there and played against the Cosmos.
Right.
When Pelé was playing.
Pelé playing as well.
Pelé, they were all playing. Carlos Alberto was there and all that sort of stuff. And I was fortunate enough to play the whole game at 17 against Beckenbauer. He pulled me to one side and he says, I'll tell you where to go. Right, to make it difficult for me. And he gave me a coaching lesson for the whole 85 minutes on where it was difficult for him and better for me to be. It was incredible.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I've had that recently with Terry Butcher. Somebody played against Terry Butcher on the debut.
It was me.
And he did exactly the same. A young 17-year-old lad made his debut and he said it never happened again for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
Giving him advice saying, well
where
done.
To be, this is more difficult for me, then that's what I did. It was brilliant, great. Never thought I was going to get a game. We went for a meal at top of the, was it Twin Towers?
Right.
Yeah, with them afterwards, and I got Pelé's autograph. There was a Union Jack and Stars and Stripes in flags on the table. So I got Pelé and Beckenbauer to sign them on both sides of each of them, and I've got them in a glass thingamabob.
You've still got them?
Yeah. On my desk.
Yeah.
17. That was 17. Yeah. It's all downhill after that.
Yeah.
Just taking it back, obviously start at Coventry, but your dad was the top player himself.
Yeah.
Was that your driving force to be
better than him?
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, all the time, better than him. He was the first £100,000 signing. He was going from Aston Villa down to Chelsea under the Tommy Docherty.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't. He was going to Liverpool. Bill Shankly was buying him from Aston Villa. He'd been at Aston Villa and scored lots of goals, my dad did. But just as that deal was being done with Villa and Liverpool, Peter Osgood broke his ankle in pre-season. And the doc phoned Bill Shankly to say, I know you're buying a big man. He said, but can we have him for a year? We'll pay 100,000 for him, right? And then you can buy him at the end of the year back for 95,000. And that's a true story. Boom. So my dad went down there to plug the Osgood chapter for 1 year. Never saw him for a year. Swinging 60s.
And what were you? Were you in and around? You know, were you on the pitch last game of the season and all that stuff?
Listen, I didn't. My other team, apart from Rangers, is Chelsea, because that's the first team I can remember my dad playing for. So I was born in 61. Now he went there in 66, 67 season.
When any player and the dad's playing as well, there's that nepotism shouting that we've spoke with, like Alex Bruce, that was like a monkey on his back trying to shake it.
It's the same position. You know, I'm playing the same position as my dad. I started off on the left wing just to get a game at Coventry City. So just it went from there to there. Big row with my dad when I left Coventry, because he always said never come out of the top league because it's always difficult to get back to the top league. We never spoke for about 8 months. Went to Portsmouth. Would be the championship now. And I was sold on that. Purely because Bobby Campbell says, I want you to be my number nine. I want you to be my centre forward. And just best thing I ever did by not listening to my dad.
I'm just going back to my experience with me. I was always, he'd advise us, but he would never fall out.
Same sort of characters, me and my dad. I'll go right back to the beginning when I did two pre-seasons at Nottingham Forest. So the second one was the year that I'd left school, so it was all or nothing. Had a good pre-season, could run all day. I was tall. I was always 6'2", 6'3", and could run for fun. So pre-season was never a problem for me. So I got to play in a couple of bounce games, scored a couple of goals, all that sort of stuff. Then that day came, knock at the door, whether you're going to get the apprenticeship. Ryan Clough sat right at the end of his big, long office. And I looked at him and I walked in and he went, oh, young man. He says, don't bother sitting down. He said, you'll never make a fucking footballer. He says, go and get yourself a job in the council. That was it. Off I went, out the door. I had no mobile phones, trying to find a post
at the council.
Phoned my dad up, said no. He said, I'm not going to have it. He said, well, leave it with me. And he phoned up Gordon Milne, who he played with at Liverpool, who was the Coventry manager. And he said, yeah, send him over. We'll have a look at him. Ronnie Wiley and Matt Scotsman, who's his assistant. And we went over there. And in that November, I signed professional forms, straight onto professional forms. And in that year, I got to play left wing against Nottingham Forest. And I crossed the ball in for Mick Ferguson, big Mick Ferguson and Ian Wallace, the two front men. To score a winning goal against Forest. So I ran all the way back up the touchline to stand in front of Ryan Clough like that. Not a clue who I was.
What's he doing?
Yes, never make a footballer.
Did you ever see him after and speak to him about
it? No. He saw plenty of me, though.
Was that the...
What did he know?
The inspiration.
Can I just say that for any young footballer out there, right? Nobody knows. Yeah. There's only you can influence whatever you do on the football pitch, and whether you want to go that extra yard, catch somebody's eye or do all that sort of stuff. It's like falling out with my dad. I never spoke to my dad for 8 months. I went to Portsmouth and was obviously I'd gone from the England youth team into the under 21s. I'd got sent off in Scotland previously to the tournament that we won. So I missed the first three games and the final of the previous one, four games, for punching Ray Stewart, the West Ham fullback.
Was that Gooden?
Eh?
Was it a good one?
Oh, I knocked him out. It was a good
one. On the field, out.
Yeah, last minute of the game, I chased him back and he was to wing a ball in. We was winning 1-0. Two legs in them days. So, as you step over the ball to let it go out, and he kicked me straight in the nuts, right? Straight in the nuts, full ball, straight in the nuts. So I just turned around and went right in the temple.
Did he get anything for the kick?
I can't remember. it was one of them moments. So I missed the final and then the first three games of the next tournament. And that was the year I was at Portsmouth. I thought, I'm not going to get back in because I've gone down the league. Mm. But as soon as that ban was lifted, I came into the team.
Was that unusual for a player in, well, obviously what is now the Championship, to be getting that call?
Yeah, because everybody else was, all the other players were, all First Division players, or Premier League players, as you would call them now. We played up at Newcastle against France. I scored four. And it just went, I thought, scored again away against France. I think I scored six or seven goals in eight games, and that's where the golden player came from, which I never knew I had until literally, I'm going to say, 2 months ago, just before Christmas. As I say, went to Portsmouth, won that under 21 thingamabob.
thingamabob.
Yeah, and that's where Milan came in. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I've gone down a division. I'm playing in league, as it would be, two.
Yep.
Championship now.
And AC Milan are knocking on.
So I've gone to play then for the under-21s. I've scored all the goals, gone to the final, scored in the final, and then got called up to go and play over in the, that triangular tournament they had at Wembley at the end of the season. And so Bobby said, come on, you're coming with us. So, and he gave me 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and a minute or something, Russia, Colombia, and another team.
Did you have a holiday book?
Pardon?
Did you muggle off?
Yeah. I was off with the boys. And literally, I'm going to say 4 days after that triangular tournament, so Bobby phoned me to say, I want you to come to South America with us.
Oh, fuck off, Bobby.
I said, Bobby.
you said you always wanted to go.
Yeah. I said, I didn't say I'd go to holiday. It was one of them. I cancelled that holiday. Jumped on the plane with the England boys, John Barnes and all, Brian Robson, Ray Wilkins, all of them. Just expecting to be put in that kit. And that was because it was only 2021. We did a training Maracanã night before the game. And then Bobby just came over to him. He said, Paul Mariner's got injured and you're starting tomorrow night. He said, have a good night's sleep. See you in the morning.
Sleep all right?
Yeah, all right. Always sleep well. That's the mad stuff. Yeah. So don't listen to your dad, right? Do what you think's best for you. Because every footballer, every young footballer has a level that they need to start at. Whether it's, down in the third division, non-league football. You look at Harry Kane. He did it the right way.
Yeah.
He went that way, that path, down the low leagues, and then back up. Learn what he needed to leave.
Different people, different ways.
Which is the way I did it.
Yeah.
Can you remember the phone call? The first phone call after that 8 months with your dad?
I said, I told you so. Yeah, that's what I said. As I say, I played in the game, still the last Englishman to score a winning goal against Brazil in American R and all that sort of stuff. Still am.
And so you know that fact, don't you?
Yeah, you told me that.
It's on the t-shirt.
Because that's a goal, you see. You remember that goal.
I remember the assist.
Yeah. Well, John Barnes, I pulled the ball down on my chest on the halfway line, and I passed it out to John, right? And then if you ever see the goal, I'm running parallel with him. So he's dropping his shoulder. They're falling out of the stands. He's doing drop. And literally, I'm standing with an open goal, and then he puts the goalkeeper on his arse and puts it in the back of the net. And within that, the celebration, I got to jump on, and he spins round and elbows me, chop bang in the jaw. Right, so that's the appreciation I got for that assist. Then he did the same thing. He got to the byline and just good old fashioned cross into the far post, centre forward, British centre forward, far post header. And nobody remembers that goal because they all remember John Barnes' goal.
I remember the assist, though.
Yeah.
It was a quiz question in the pub the other week. Yeah. Got the assist for John Barnes' goal. Yeah. If you remember at the time, because Ray Wilkins was already at AC Milan on this trip, what kind of relationship did you have with them at this point? Did you have much to do with them?
Well, after scoring that goal, all right, Ray knocked... The Brazil goal, yeah. I keep forgetting it.
Keep forgetting it again.
Yes. I was lying there in the room. I was with Gary Stephen of Tottenham, not Gary Stephen of Everton.
Yeah. Yep.
So right now, ready for go for training, and knock on the door, and Ray walked in, and I thought this is your classic wind up.
Yeah,
you know, your senior pro comes in. And he just said, you know, I've signed for AC Milan. I signed for AC Milan, he said, in the Easter. So I'm off there after this trip. And he said, I've just been on the phone to them and they would like to sign you. Not talk to you. It was sign you. So I'm going, you haven't a fucking laugh, right? Yeah. I said, because I'm this 21-year-old lad.
Have you got the locks? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's coming. Right,
it's coming. Coming. They're coming. And he said, I said, I've still got 2 years left on my Portsmouth contract. That's in my head, right?
Sorry, Ray. It's enough for me.
I don't think Portsmouth would sell me. Blah, 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 blah. This is the young, naive guy. He said, but would you be interested? I said, well, I'd have a talk to them, right? So, see, that's how you are when you're that young. You're just concentrating on the here and now and getting ready for the next game against Chile and then Uruguay. So I was recovering from a hangover, I think, after beating Brazil. We had a belting couple of days.
So at least you go into that spinning with the big boys anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. So Ray goes away, I think nothing more of it. And I'm going, he's like, wind up, Gary. He said, no. Anyway, we chat, but training, chain 2 or 3 days. And then he came back, he said, any more thoughts on that? I said, yeah, I'd like to talk to him. He said, well, I think the deal's been done between the clubs already. And I said, well, it can't have been, because I've been no part of it. Ray said, just be prepared. So he walked out and Bobby Robson walked in and said, you need to fly back. So you need to fly back. There's been a deal done between AC Milan and Portsmouth. I think it was 1.3 million or something. And I thought, This has to be true now because
Bobby's on the wind-up.
Bobby's on the wind-up. So
it's a long flight on a hangover as well. Whenever that on your mind,
I tell you what, it was a long way. And I had my agent, who I'd just sort of employed, I'm going to say that year, that season.
Okay, he dropped on, didn't he?
No. I'd known Dennis. It was Dennis Roach. I don't know if you've heard of it. He was the first super agent, basically. He had me, Mark Hughes, Glenn Hoddle, Terry Venables, Johan Cruyff. Long story short, he met me at the airport. I got all the Milan boys. We went to this big house by the side of Heathrow Airport, and we stayed in the house for the day, and Dennis was going from room to room to room to room as sporting director, manager, director of football, whatever. There was loads.
Got of people. Like a Godfather scene in
bed. Yeah. Well, if you'd have known who my chairman was, Giuseppe Farina, who lived in South Africa and commuted every weekend to watch his team play because he couldn't stay in Milan or Italy. I'll let you know the rest of that.
Let his minds run away with themselves.
Yeah. So.
And just to sign the, to de- so seal the deal, you have to kiss his ring. Like, you don't have to sign the
steady.
1.3 million. Is that, obviously it's a lot of money, but is that massive? Is that like a massive signing for Milan? Well, do you know, in comparison to what other signings would make?
It was a risky signing. A risky signing because Luther Blissett hadn't had the best time before me. He was a 9 as well. It was like, whoa, we're going for another English number 9. Mm. I was only 21. That was a transitional period for Milan because Milan were bringing all the young players through, which would become on to be that that great Milan sign.
Half a decent team.
It was half a decent team. So
how was the integration for you? Because you've got 23 Italians, you and Ray Wilkins.
And Ray. Ray was brilliant for me because he'd started to speak the language. Ray did a lot of the talking, but it was a completely different environment. For Ray, it was as well, because Ray, don't forget, was he was like the senior player at 28. I think he would be 28 then.
Yeah.
So the kind of training that we were doing was completely alien to him, and more so for me, because I'd been down, obviously, all we used to do when we were players was run around, warm up, have a five-a-side, maybe have a game in half a pitch. And that was it. We'd do some more runs and some more runs. We had the heart monitors back in the day, pre-season training and all this sort of stuff. We were only allowed to, in pre-season, we were only allowed to work between, I'm going to say, 155 and 175 heart rate. So all go and run. Those with a good heartbeat would be right at the front. Those would struggle would still work the same, yeah. Spread out. We'd all done the same energy.
Yeah. Just shows how... Yeah. Far ahead they were.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Compared to us, yeah. My
first heart rate monitor was 98, I think.
Yeah.
So you were alien.
Yeah.
You hit the ground running, four goals in, was it six, first six games?
I got sent off in my first game.
Classic.
Yeah.
Hit the ground running.
This was brought to my attention again, but I knew I'd been sent off in the first game. It was a Cup Italia.
Was it another slug?
It was a headbutt.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect. We've signed a fucking...
You've got to get in with the ultras.
Yeah, absolutely. That sealed it.
Yeah.
Honestly, you hit nail right on the head there. It was... In pre-season, they nicknamed me the Tornado because I never stopped running and tackling and moving and fullbacks and all that lot. And Neil's said to me, you need to slow down. He said, I want you to play as a nine, a European nine. So we don't want you to tackle fullbacks at all. If you're staying within the penalty box, that means our left-sided midfield play has to come high to engage, and our fullback will come high, and that's where we'll be.
I press.
He wouldn't have signed me. That's all I was good at, Mark. Yeah. And then fullback.
I think I could have played in Europe.
Yeah. You were born from Milan, man.
So, yeah, it was...
Did you end up doing less work than what you were used to?
More work in the middle of the park. Yeah. It's like Johan Cruyff always said, if my forwards are running more than 15 metres, right, to get on the ball, they're either stupid or mad. So, yeah, first lesson, taken on board pretty quickly.
Absorbed.
Yeah.
AC Milan was struggling for the years before this game, weren't they? Was it they hadn't won in five years or something?
They'd been demoted 7 years, I think it was.
Seven years.
Yeah, they'd been demoted for betting, basically.
So that's why he's in South Africa.
So we're down into Serie C. And this was, the first season back into the big time. Colivati, who was at Milan, he was their captain at Inter. He jumped ship and gone to Inter, which never happened. And then, as you say, I think I scored four goals in the first five games or something or other. This comes up. It's our home game.
Do you remember walking out that day?
Yeah,
that first
I do absolutely remember that day. It was 92,000 people in a 78,000 stadium. no word of a lie.
Yeah.
You could not see any exits. You know the big where you... Everybody was standing up. I've got pictures of it. You cannot, all you can see is faces. You know, it's crammed, 92,000 people in it, and hair on the arms, back of your neck and all that sort of stuff.
Are you thinking, who can I headbutt?
Who can I run into the ground, basically? Yeah.
What minute was your goal?
It was second half, I'm going to say. It was about 78 minutes.
Did your eyes light up when he's hung it up there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's coming. I'm getting it. Yeah, because we'd had a come into me and Colavati literally 10 minutes before.
Gary Neville would have had a field there. He's got to get side on there, hasn't he? Oh. He's under the ball.
But the ball, see, as the ball was... Because they had the ball in the wider area, right?
Did you win it back?
We won it back. Yeah. We won it back. Tassotti won it back high up the park. And because Verdis then, who was playing in the middle or round me, he was out the boy that crossed it. All right, so... He literally stumbled on it. So that meant that Colavati, who was obviously coming up the pitch because he thought it was coming up the pitch, he was flat. So as the ball went wide, he had to turn. All right, so I stood right behind him here, so he had no fucking clue where I was.
Meat and drink.
Yeah.
And the ball, was coming. Yeah, it was coming, and I was all over this boy. He was dead.
Have you seen the picture?
He was getting everything.
What, the mid?
There's a picture, but you say 90,000. It's just
faces,
bodies everywhere.
I've got two pictures. I've got a study in the man cave. And it's the only place the missus will let me have any football stuff. All right, so I've got a black and white picture from this side is black and white from behind it, and this side is colour. So they're both facing each other. So the ball is coming from Verdis that way. The pitch is taken this way in colour. And from behind me, it's black and white. So I have them either side of the desk.
Zenga was very disrespectful for diving, was he?
Oh, I told him. I said he wouldn't have stopped that as it hit the back of the net. He was coming back.
Walter.
Yeah. It was just one of them moments, you know, you're seeing it and it's going in. I had a classic with Passarella. I'm going to say probably a couple of games after that. I'll leave that story anyway. That was the first time I tried to hurt somebody in that game, and I was him. Anyway,
done it, man. Did he do you? And oh, he wanted.
And oh yeah, he did me. No, he spat in my face twice. It was the first player ever to spit within the space of 10 minutes.
Massively.
And then the referee standing right in front of me, and he's going like that. It's just part and parcel. And every time he went past me, he went, "It was me." You know, like that.
He's rubbing salt in the wounds.
And he's literally rubbing it in. And then 10 minutes later, same again. He did it again, and I'm fuming right now. And it's in the San Siro. So we get a corner, and this ball's coming into this. It's just like the Calavati situation. I'm getting this ball. I'm clearing people out of the way. I'm on my way in. And they've just seen the little Argentinian coming for it. And I'm going, ball, player, ball, player. And I literally, I left it to him. And as he headed the ball, I headed him. Boom. Like that. Done.
Night Vienna.
Always done. He was done. He was out for about 3 minutes. And it was the only time I really let myself down.
Yeah. Felt bad.
I don't think you have.
Felt bad for a nanosecond.
Yeah.
Right. But as he brought him to and lifted him off because he was done, I went over to him and said, "By the way, that was me."
You'd rather him punch you in your face, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Than spitting you.
Absolutely horrible. First time ever. I was completely, whoa, what was all that about? And then second time, and I'm looking at the referee, and the referee's going, "That's it."
So he saw it.
Let's get back to the Inter game.
But in terms of the red card in the first game and then that goal, amongst the ultras, the fans, you must have been a god walking the streets in Milan.
That was the next stage, you know, the long hair and all that sort of stuff. I couldn't walk in the streets in Milan. My existence in Milan was home, training ground, San Siro. And it was not too bad. You know, you could deal with it because the mad fanatic fans. Yeah. So that day came of that goal. Then from then on, I couldn't do anything. We went in with a family, and literally we went into, buy some clothes or something or other. And the shop, they had to shut the shop because one person had then gone and told another person. And then there was like 50 people. Then there was 100 people. Then the road was mobbed. And kids are getting knocked over and all that sort of stuff. And then it became farcical, you know. Yeah. Police had to come, open, shut the road, bum, 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 bum.
Which is amazing, but I imagine up to a point, it's not enjoyable.
It does not exist. There's no life.
Yeah, work-life balance.
I lived in a little village, Castellanza, between Milanello and San Siro. There was a nice restaurant there. It was a Milan's who owned it. So every time I wanted to go for food, I'd phone him up and he'd put me in a little back room. and that was it with the family. And
that was Ronaldo-esque, isn't it?
It's crazy. It was absolutely crazy.
How did you keep the Barnet so fresh? Was it a mousse? It was always sparkling, wasn't it?
In the right place, though, aren't you, to get the right advice?
Yeah.
Milan ice cream. Had you fully embraced the Italian lifestyle?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love clothes. I love clothes. I literally bought, when I came to Glasgow Rangers, Johnny Versace, because I wore his gear, because Milan was Armani, but I was allowed to wear Versace casual sporting stuff.
Allowed.
I was one of the first players to sell my advertising rights, because I was playing with Paolo Rossi in the first year, and I think it was IMG. They just bought out this thing where you could buy, you know, advertising rights for players, which they do all the time now. So the Versace thing, they would sell my rights. You pay your salary more than the football, all cleared by the government.
So you're getting paid to wear Versace clothes?
Yeah.
Are you still getting Jagamo?
It was a completely different world, and that's when I came to Rangers. I spoke to the Versace people, and they bought one into the Italian centre here in Glasgow.
Going back. Yeah.
So we mentioned the things at the start about the players that you've played with. Maldini, was he a young lad?
Paolo's a really good friend. He was doing the same thing as me. He was business development at Milan, when I was business development at Rangers. So we chatted a lot. He had big problems because of the American owners, what he wanted to do with the club. He's from the same background, a famous dad, same position, played fullback. His dad played fullback, all that sort of stuff. So me and Ray used to take him as a 16-year-old in the car to training. He wanted to come because he wanted to learn English. Great guy, great family. And then he became, in my second year of doing the job, with the same job as him, the club then made him sporting director, and then they went on to win the league in the third year under him, Paolo. So we're chatting, and then second year they went to the Champions League semi-final, and then the club sacked him. It was ridiculous. He's an unsackable person.
Good wingman.
He's a great lad, great player, one of the best of all time, along with Franco Baresi, Costa Corta. That was Tassotti, Costa Corta, Baresi, and Maldini was the back four. You got midfield, you had endless young players that were coming through. Massaro, another one. Verdis, who I played with, because Paolo had his career with his knees and all that sort of stuff. So it was a team of very, very young players coming through.
So were you at Milan when Berlusconi came in?
Yes.
Took over the club?
Yes.
Interesting character.
Oh, why? Yes, we had our words.
Yeah.
Because he came in year two, at the end of year two, for me and Ray. And it was still the two foreign rules. So as a statement, as soon as he came in, without telling anybody, he bought Hullet, Van Basten, and Rijkaard.
So he can only play two of you.
He could only play two. But he obviously knew something that was going to come. It would be three foreigners, right?
Yeah. But still, there's five of you.
There's five of us. He also knew my popularity at the football club and how I was with the fans, especially with the ultras. So the last year was very, very difficult for me. He used to come in and Niels was coming up, I'm 68, 70 years old, and he knew time was up because we got Fabio. Fabio was a youth team. I think he saw writing on the wall, basically, because he used to come in. Berlusconi, just before literally an hour before the game, and he'd come in and he'd just go to Niels. He said, he's not playing. And walk it out.
To you?
Yeah. Well, he'd tell Niels, I'm not playing. So don't put his name down in the starting 11, basically. And Niels told me this was happening. So the team were doing this. We were up and down. He was interfering with all that sort of stuff. So it's a true story, right? We are up, down, up, down, up, down. I think we were seventh or eighth or something. So he called a meeting with the owner at Milanello. So he wanted to interview all the players individually. So he flew in, helicopter, landed, blah, 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 blah. And as he did, he interviewed all the players and left me to the last. The last player, I was sat there for about fucking 2 hours waiting to get in. So boom, boom, everybody been boom, boom, boom. I went in. And I knew my standing at the football club anyway. He says, what do you think's the problem? And I just said, I think you're the problem. Straight away, I went straight at him. And he looked at me and he says, why? I said, because you're too much involvement in the football. He says, what do you mean? I says, well, I should be starting every game, right? I've started when I was fit all the previous 2 years and we progressed year on year on year. I said, I know you're a very successful man. I had a really good relationship with Silvio, really good, after this conversation. And I said to him, I said, I know you're a very active man in the business side of it. He had 150-something companies, TV companies, this company, that company, this, that, the other. I said, I know you're a very successful man. I said, and I just said to him, I said, how do you become that successful? He says, well, I employ people. I says, well, this is what you're doing at a football club. You employ people. I said, tell me the people you employ, do they know more about your business than you do? He said, oh, yeah. He said, I bring the business, then I employ people to run that business. And if the figures aren't right and we're not where we should be, I sack them. And I said, this game's no different. Football game is no different. This is just a part of your personality, this football club, right? And I just said to him, I said, why do you employ Niels Liedholm? He said, to manage the team. I said, well, let him manage the team then instead of coming in before a game and telling him, I'm not playing. And then he just smiled. So he was in, the other players were in probably 5, 10, 15 minutes max. I was in there 45 minutes. Next day, he did a thing in the Gazzetta dello Sport. Big headline. Only player to tell the truth was me. And I told him exactly how it was. And then I played for the rest of that season. And the results went, and consistency went back up.
That's just 23, by the way.
Yeah.
You're only 23 when you're...
Yeah. So anyway, well, I went back to Franco's testimonial when I was manning at a Hull. And that would be 98, 99 season. He came straight over to say, Marty, he said, thanks for that conversation. He said, I would never forget that.
Because that could have gone terribly wrong.
It could have done. But I knew more about football than he did.
Yeah.
All day long, you know. So he took that on board and look what Milan did.
Yeah. It's mad that, because he was making your life a nightmare before that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, personal.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew I should be playing and the players knew I should be playing.
So what was a Milan Christmas do like then? Did you have them or...?
Oh, Milan Christmas do. Can I say the Milan Christmas do?
It's not fancy dress.
No, we didn't have a Christmas do. We had an audience with the Pope. Right?
That sounds all right, that.
An audience with the Pope. Right? And I've got a building company at this particular period. I've got a lot of guys working for me. Ex-father-in-law, bless him. He ran it. We funded it. I funded it and grew it. I've got to be Christmas dinner with the boys. And we've got this thing with the Pope. So I'm going, what's the most important thing here? And I went, oh, fuck it. I'm taking the boys out. So I never went.
Never met the Pope?
I didn't. No, I was not interested. I'm not religious.
He could have signed your flag, though, couldn't he, Pele?
No, not for me. So I went back to Nottingham, took the boys out, and then got crucified in the newspaper in Italy, turning down the Pope.
He's a big, it's quite a big one to turn down.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So did obviously you said you couldn't really go out in Milan and stuff, but did you have like nights out, the team nights out, all like that, or were it just a coffee and a fag?
Not really. We went, if it was going to go for a night out, no, me and Ray would go, if the girls were away, we'd go into our local little place.
Couldn't really make the most of being a fucking superstar then, could you? Do you know, like...
I made up for that when I was at Monaco. Oh, yes.
Do you know what I mean? You're thinking, fucking the Italian birds and whatever and all that. You're thinking, I'm just going to be dripping in Fanny. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Happily married.
So you were Wenger's first signing at Monaco?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Did that come about?
Berlusconi made it easy for me to leave because he wanted me out of Italy. Verona and Roma were both chasing me. He wanted me out of Italy. Dennis, agent, said to me, he's been approached, Monaco, a different way of life, different football, which for me was ticked a lot of boxes. And as I say, Wenger, I was his first signing when he came in at the football club.
Did Hoddle have anything to do with it? Did you speak to him beforehand?
Glenn wasn't there. Everybody gets this all wrong. Glenn was signing for PSG, right? So I signed for Monaco. We go down there. We start pre-season. I'm going to say a week, 9 days into pre-season. And Wenger comes to me after training as we're walking off the pitch. He says, I'm still looking for a 10 to play with him, Mark. He said, because that's the way we play. You know, we play with the two wingers and one in the middle and then a supporting 10. Said, I'm still looking for a 10 to play with you. I said, well, why don't you go and get Glenn Hoddle? He said, Glenn's signed for PSG. I said, no, he hasn't. I said, he has. No, he hasn't. He has. Trust me, he hasn't signed.
Arsene.
Trust me. Trust me. Because Dennis Roach is Glenn's agent, right? And Dennis, as you know, is my agent. I said, you've got Dennis's number. Give him a call. He said, hi, I thought he'd sign for PSG. He's supposed to be signing tomorrow. He's supposed to be flying into Paris and signing tomorrow. So you've asked me at the right time. So he phoned Dennis, jumped on a plane, flew into Nice, and 2 days later he became a Monaco player. And that's how that story is. Glenn was always 2 weeks after me. He came in, right, up to training. We'd sort of just typical turned up and we was sort of started the training session. So we'd warmed up and all that sort of stuff. So Glenn arrived late. He'd come in, he got changed and he started to walk out. And so Wenger got everybody into the centre circle. He said, this is our new number 10. I remember this so clearly. This is our new number 10 that will be the supporting role for Mark, blah, 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 blah. And he said, Claude Puel, I want you to do all his running and tackling and give him the ball. Jean-Philippe Roux, another French international, I want you to do all his tackling, right, and give him the ball. And Patrick Meige was a young under 21 captain. He said, I want you to do all his running and tackling and give him the ball. He said, Glenn will not come any deeper than the halfway line to defend. He will pick the ball up in the middle of the park and go forward.
Glenn.
Let's train.
I bet Glenn were all like, sounds good to me. Are we going down the marina?
Yeah, that's it. And that's how he was introduced. And that was, we had the first year we won the league. Glenn scored, I'm going to say 12 goals. I scored 23 or something, one behind Papin. Went to the cup final. And then Glenn went 10 years too late to European football.
Yeah.
If he'd have gone when he was he would have been.
What age would he have been?
Platini came to watch us train, right? A lot of the time, because it was all new. This was completely different sort of training. And Platini wrote an article after about 8 games, and he said if Glenn had been born French, he'd have played over 150 games for France right now at his age.
And how old was he when he arrived?
About 28. About the same. 28. 30, that age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, going from, you said 90-odd thousand at Milan in that at that game.
Yeah, to 7,000 in Monaco.
7,000-seater stadium?
No, yeah. It's not. It's a 19,000, 18,000, and it's a football pitch that's on the fifth floor of a building. You've got three underground car parks, right? On top of that, you've got an international swimming pool. On top of that, you've got an international basketball arena. And on top of that, you've got the dressing rooms and offices. And then you have the football pitch on the top. That's the stadium.
This has got good parking for match days, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. There's a pub right over the road.
Another name into the mix for you. George Weah.
George, he was a young, raw lad. The build-up to George is, it comes on the back of Suey trying to get me, because Suey Graham tried to get me to go to Rangers. After my first year at Milan, the year I was leaving Milan, and then this time when George Weah is just coming to the club. George,
on trial. He comes on trial, doesn't he?
He comes on trial. He's 17, 18 years old. Italia 90. Graham was over staying in Monaco, okay, with a young David Murray, who was taking over the cleans from David Holmes, and the then owner. Arsene had just bought this really young, raw African, George Weah, in into the club. He came with all his, you know, his long gowns and the hat and all of it. He was one of these guys that was unbelievably mesmerizing or absolutely hopeless. He couldn't trap a dead rat. Some days it was like, oh, and then other days you'd be going, oh, wow. You know, he's one of those players. So this is how it started anyway. So Graham comes, bumped into him. I'm out just with the kids in Casino Square. We're going for an ice cream and bump into Graham. Hey, oh, big man, boom, 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 boom. Any chance of getting you this year? I said, well, I haven't played for 2 years because I've just had four operations on my ankle, blah, 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 blah. Been out for 2 years. He said, I know exactly where you are. You've been running, you've been training, you've not been playing, but I know where you are. As soon as I got this injury, and it was a big injury, right? It was one of them. It was a double dislocation, Galatasaray at home. So I put my foot down this divot and it dislocated. Played in a big, big strapping. That strapping sort of held everything together.
So you carried on in the game?
For 10 minutes. I played 10 minutes because the strapping had kept everything in place. But it was squelchy. Squelch. But all because it was that severe, it had severed all the nerves in my ankle. So I had no pain. So squelch. I come off and I'm walking off and I'm sat on a table like this, guys. And Wenger comes in into the medical room, and the guy got these scissors and he went, cut the strapping off of my foot, just went,
oh,
and just went the wrong way. So he gobbled it straight back up, strapped it up. And I went over to Lyon the next morning, saw a surgeon and operated the first time there. And that was over. I had three or more operations, three recuperations over the next 2 years.
How old were you?
Oh, I was 27, 26, 27. Got all that out of the way. And this is when I'm bumped into
Souness.
But as soon as I got that injury, the club gave me a 5-year new contract. As soon as I got the injury, I went up to Glenn, who lived below me.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And I just said to you, is that you? Have you just pushed that through? Because it was a handwritten note, it's just signed by Wenger. He said, no, it's no. So I spoke to Wenger and boom, boom, boom. I said, no, that's real. That's what we want. We see you being better, stronger, but boom, 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 boom. Anyway, again, moving forward to the George Weah thing, he said, and this is why we're giving you this because I think with my mentality, you're going to be bigger, stronger, everything. The surgeon said you're going to make a full recovery, and boom, we want you to bring on George Weah. We're bringing him into the club. We want him to be able to look at you, come and play with you, all that sort of stuff. So that's the confidence that we've got into you. So bump into Souness in 90. So I'm 1 year into this new deal sort of stuff.
Is it a good deal as well compared to what you were?
Yeah, literally twice as much as I was earning before. So it was
with the injury as well.
I thought it was a laugh.
Lined up, yeah.
Yeah, I thought.
I mean, you're still thinking now. What are we doing?
Yeah, what are we doing? Anyway, so I sort of listened to what Graham was saying. I knew what was happening, because Big Terry was here, Gary Stevens was here, Trevor Stevens was coming, all that sort of stuff. So he's building a right good side. I went to Wenger and I just said, I just spoke to Graeme Souness. He's here watching Scotland play. They're playing that play down in Genoa. And he said, he said, I can understand how you feel. He said, but you can see the trust that we put in here. Yeah. There's not a problem for us. He said, whatever you want to do will be the right decision. Whatever you want to do will be the right decision, not what we want. He said, if you need to go and change your arena, the situation, then I understand that, because sometimes you need that look. You need to go somewhere else and do something different and then re-energize. He said, but as you can see from the contract we gave you, we've got every faith that you're going to be that and more. Sort of stuff.
Fair play, right, man.
And he said, and whatever you decide, you go with our blessing. And he's always been that. I've seen him lots of times since then, and he's just said, you know, what we said came true. He said, you went on.
Kicked on again,
sort of stuff.
It's a big lifestyle change.
Yeah, well, I used to take the boys down to Monaco before all the cup finals at Rangers. That's what we did. And one of them particular trips, we sat in Casino Square, and Ian Durant was well two sheets to the wind. Right, sat there, and he went, Monaco, sip, govern, you're off your fucking rocker.
before we get on to Rangers,
yeah.
One of John's claim to fame is he used to live a stone's throw from the drummer off Chumbawamba.
Oh, say that again.
He used to live a stone's throw from the drummer out of Chumbawamba.
Who did?
John.
Okay.
That's his claim to fame.
Right.
He never shuts up about it.
And?
Can you raise that? Who did you live next to?
Oh, right. Iron Senna. Just.
See you later. I don't know what's more impressive, Paolo, the Prince, the Pope, or Ayrton
Senna lived the floor below me in Monaco. And all he wanted to do was play football.
Did you have a kickabout with him?
We used to play before the Grand Prix. We used to have five a side in St. John. The drivers would all the guys that like football, not everybody, all our racing car drivers want to be footballers, and footballers want to be racing car drivers.
Yeah.
Boris Becker?
Yeah, he lived in the building next to us. He was
a man. Don't still fucking own that, does he?
Never out of wardrobe.
Yes. he did like a beer. those sort of guys, they came and went because of what they were doing. Mm-hmm. They were not always there sort of stuff, but when they were there, they were always good fun to be with.
Imagine some celebrity nights out there, didn't they? No. Yeah.
Café de Paris.
I met Frank Sinatra in Monaco. Is that the one?
Boris.
Can I say a true story? Me and Glenn, we come back just after a game and we're staying at the Beach Pass, our hotel. Over the road is a beautiful Italian restaurant, which it was the guys that connected to it were Milan supporters. So we literally got in as they were shutting. So we got tracksuits on. We'd just come back for an away game. So we just got in, right? And I'm sitting there and it's busy. It's outside. It's summer. And we're sitting there and I'm talking to Glenn and I think we must have had a good result, blah, 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 blah. And out the corner of my eye, I see like two guys. And the first guy I see is Roger Moore. And I'm and there's two really, their wives. They were with their wives, and the two guys had black ties on.
Yeah.
So they'd obviously been to a gig or something, or just over the road. And I'm looking at, and I'm going to Glenn. I said, that's Roger Moore. I said, that's James Bond. You've got James Bond in the restaurant.
And he dresses James Bond.
I said, I'm definitely going to go over and get an autograph in a minute. And he looked forward. He said, I know. He said, that's James Bond. And that's fucking Frank Sinatra sat by the side of him.
He's with all blue eyes.
And I was, that was it. That was it. I was straight over.
Yeah. Did you sit down and have a drink?
No, no, I just said, yeah. Aye, bada bada blah. And just, it was like a 10-second chat, you know. It was one of them surreal moments, you know.
So just normal, just seeing.
Yeah.
A-lister. Oh,
yeah, okay. There was, a Ringo Starr in front of me, right? This is a true story. Again, you know the old DVDs? Not DVDs, the big things that you used to shove in a telly.
Cassette things.
Yeah, stood in one of these video stores, and he's trying to rent one of these things on his American Express, and they were not taking his American Express, right? So we start, and the queue's getting bigger, and he's kicking off, and in realistic terms, this thing is about £2, and he's trying to pay for it on a card. So somebody
stepped in
and just went.
Bought the video for Thomas the Tank.
It's nice to know there's got a blockbuster, though, isn't it?
Well, he probably was that.
Because I think, did your dad play with George Best?
Yes. They were really pals. They were real pals. When we used to go over the 70s, Mallorca. It was, you know, Mallorca became popular. Palmer and all that sort of stuff.
Little walk into Magaluf.
And invariably, my dad and George would... It was a lot of footballers over there, but they were pretty good friends. And we had him around a hotel, or we'd go around his hotel two or three times over 3 or 4 years sort of stuff. And, yeah, just... Keepy Uppies on the beach and all that sort of stuff. But he's just a nice shy guy. That's how I remember George Best, as being a shy guy, very quiet, and that was it.
You played against him, didn't you?
Yeah, San Jose. When I was to Detroit, he was out there, and I've grown. When I went, I introduced myself to him, he said, so you've grown a bit since then and all that sort of stuff. So he did remember the times with my dad and all that sort of stuff in Mallorca.
When you made that decision to go to Rangers, did it, like you talked about that contract under the door, was it a pay cut to go to Rangers?
Yes, I was probably down to one-fifth. I was getting one-fifth,
really?
Yeah. Probably something, it was around about there.
You're leaving Monte Carlo for Glasgow?
Yeah, and getting taxed on it as well, so...
No disrespect to Glasgow.
Oh,
though,
no, not whatsoever.
You do want to get out of here alive, do you know?
It's not Café de Paris, you're not bumping into all blue eyes, are you?
No. But by that time, I was fine. I've never been driven by money. It's always been driven by me and what I want to do. Being selfish, super selfish, on where you want your career to go. Can you still knock that one off? And can you still achieve that? And that's what's driven me. I came back, and when I came back with Graham, and Graham's Graham. He's one of them. You love him or hate him, and I've always got on really, really well with him. You are wanting to be in a side that wants to win, has to win, and that's what Graham brought back to Glasgow Rangers, and I wanted to be part of that. You know, I'd won a championship already. I've been to cup finals, the Italian cup final, the French cup final, but it's... Back in the dressing room, you know, you're back.
A British dressing room as well.
Back in a British dressing room, yeah.
Where does McCoy's rank in playing partners?
Oh, brilliant. Alistair is. I'll tell you the story with Alistair. We, you know, I came into the club. I knew who Alistair was. I know he scores goals. And I knew what was going on, I think, between Graham and Alistair. And I think I saw exactly what Graham saw in Alistair. He saw more. All right. And as soon as I said to Graham after about, I'm going to say a week, 10 days, I said, why is this guy not scoring 30, 40 goals a season? Honestly, he's the best finisher I've seen. And that's with Lineker, Paolo Rossi, Ramon Diaz, all these players I played with. I said, he's just a natural. And he said, I know. That's my thought. But I think he's just settled it because he's that cheeky chappy. You always think he's that cheeky chappy. And he is, but he's very smart. He's very, very clever, Alistair. And he said, that's what I want more from him. Graham says, right. He said, I bought Morris Johnson here. That's why I bought Morris Johnson here to sort of try and liven everything up. He said, and you're going to be playing with him. So Alistair, that's it. Alistair will not play. And so that became a problem for me straight away because Morris Johnson wasn't the ideal player for me to play with. And to some of the supporters, they saw me as taking Alistair's place. I had a chat with Alistair and I said to him, I said, well, I'm always gonna be the nine, right? So you need to be close to me all the time, no further than 15 yards away from me. You need to look where I am all the time, right? Not so much focusing on the ball, but you have to focus on me and take your positions from me. And I said, to be able to do that, you're going to need to be a bit fitter, and all that sort of stuff. And Alistair, you know, he's a smart guy. He understood this.
Wait a little bit. Chubby?
I'm going to say half a stone. Yeah. But the 15 yards away, it'll put you, I'm going to say, if you can lose that half a stone or a little bit of weight, right, and be that little bit fitter, then I said to him, I said, trust me, we'll score goals. You'll score a lot more goals. So me and Morris started off. Wasn't ideal because Morris would hair off out on the right wing and on the left wing and isolated in the middle of the park, which was fine. And then Morris picked up an injury. Alistair, the cheeky chap, he used to sit on the bench with a big pot of tea, right? It's a massive big pot of tea. And come on, with all these names, they call him the judge and all this sort of stuff. But he did. He watched and watched and watched. And soon as we got to play together, the rest was history. It was like boom, like we've been playing together all our lives. I did what I did, and he did what he did. And he went boom. He went up into 30, 38s, 39s, 36, 40. And I was scoring 20, 28s, 27s. 17 was my first year here. Which was 18 goals, worst year for goals for me. But I hadn't played for 2 years. I hadn't played. I haven't played for 2 years. So I thought I would hit the ground running, but it took me until February to be non-thinking. Everything became a natural thing again for me. And then, boom, we went on and just scored just under 300 goals in five seasons between us.
I absolutely and love he the scored. Fact you call him Alistair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's what his mum called him.
I'm Christopher now to you two. Prick.
And I think two European golden boots and back to back is what we were all about. We were all about scoring goals.
So. Was he a practical joker?
Everybody in the dressing room is practical, Dioka. I sat in a corner with Ian Durant on one side, him on the McCoist on the other side, Ian Ferguson, another absolute. It was a dressing room full of lunatics.
It's not been used to that. Were there any lunatics on the continent?
Not really.
No.
Not really. So, yeah, but it was. I think everybody knew how far they could go with me, and it wasn't very far.
Did you know?
Yeah, no, not very far.
Did anybody go over that? Did anybody push you?
Couple of people.
They soon find out.
Yeah.
Any examples?
Not going to say that. There's a few ended up in tears.
Tears. Was it Duncan Ferguson? Did he cut your tie or something, or shirt?
No, Duncan.
Was that bollocks?
No, that was rubbish, because Duncan was, he was a lovely lad, came too early for me. Duncan wanted to play all the time, as he should do. He's a young lad, and he was, you know, he had the energy to be able to play. But probably the mindset of coming from, he was a big fish in a small pond at Dundee United, and coming to a massive big ocean where he was a little
minnow.
Yes. And he fell far foul of that. And I think, as I say, I thought it was too early for him to come. But no, I know he's a daft lad, but he's not that daft.
He wasn't one that pushed it.
Were you
talking about that?
We used to have fights in training all the time, every week, most days.
What with the lads you were playing against?
Same dressing room.
That mentality you're talking about no nonsense, people knew how far to push it. Is that why... Did Gazza come with you when he first arrived? Were you put in charge of looking after him?
Yeah. We're coming back. I found out, Walter told me, long story short, Walter told me, he said, he's coming, but we need to keep it quiet. So I kept it quiet. He came. And then Walter said to me, he said, I want him to come and stay with you in Helensburgh. I said, and I'm going... This is pre-season, and all I do is run my nuts off, eat like mad, and sleep. That's all the three things I do, and it's completely opposite to what Paul does.
You don't want to add babysitting to that list.
Oh, absolutely. And to be fair, he said the family will be away, so it'll just be Paul and maybe Jimmy. But Jimmy turned up, right? Jimmy turned up. And this big blacked out Range Rover, and he jumped out of this car, blah, 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 blah. And I said to Jimmy, why are you driving? I said, because I'm his driver. I said, but you're on a driving ban, are you not, right now? He said, yeah, but I'm still his driver. And that was
the introduction.
That was what was coming into the house, and Walter said, I want him to stay here, because if there's any trouble, if the police are called out, because Walter lived at the end of the road, he said, I can get to your house before the police.
Didn't want to go in with Walter. Walter's having him.
I can get to the house before anything else, and that was the gist of, and I knew Paul anyway, sort of stuff. But we're going to say 4 or 5 days. And I said to Walter, I said, can I do this anymore?
five days and out.
He was, if that. He's a lovely guy, heart as big as a bucket. But it's manic experience with him. He's in every room, every drawer's open, and you know, it's one of these. He needs to know where everything is, and it was. He is, and rightly so, classed as one of the greatest British players of a generation, if ever. But he's one of the hardest players to play with as a striker, because the way he played the game, it was off the cuff. It was all made up.
Yeah.
So there was no tells. Mm. There was no tells to whatever. So I'm looking at him, and you're going, oh, and then he'll go, oh, and then, oh, fuck. He's done me.
Yeah.
He's done me. So
has there ever been a conflict because of that?
No,
could you have to try and speak to him?
No, because really, in that period, he came in, and then I had an ankle operation and a knee all in one go. It was just a tidy up and all that sort of stuff. And then Ray came in for me at QPR and offered the club £1.5 million for a 34/35-year-old centre forward, and I sort of moved on very quickly. So I left in the. In the November, as he was there in the June, July, August. So I only played with him for a short period of time. He was very, very difficult to play with.
I suppose because it works both ways, doesn't it? That's spontaneity. In the defenders can't read it,
nobody thinks about it like that. You just think of him as a great player, and then everybody else should be able to be on the same page as him. And you say, well, nobody's on the same page as Paul. because he's not even on the same page as himself. do you know what I mean? He's always in his mind ahead of everything.
Yeah,
yeah, he's ahead of everybody.
And that's everything. You don't even know where cups and saucers are in your own house.
I can imagine him just fetching KFC back and that for after training.
I said to Wallace, he needs to go. I need to sleep. He'd probably slept.
I need to sleep.
He's
like
a guy.
A newborn, isn't it?
He probably sleeps 6 hours in 3 days. That's how he is.
Oh, dear me.
Did you always want to go back to England to play, if you think back?
Did I always want... I was wanting to finish at Rangers. That's where I wanted to finish at. My dad always says, never make a sporting decision when you're injured or not in the right place, because invariably it's the wrong decision when you're down. And we've all made decisions when you've been in bad places, and invariably they are the wrong decisions. So I made a bad decision to go and join QPR.
Injured at the time.
I was just recovering from these two, the ankle and the knee clear out. So I was in a situation where I'm not good when I'm not playing. Yeah. So I made that decision. Well, the club, they was getting $1.5 million for me. So, and Ray was wanting me to go and help him down there at QPR because they were in that. You know, the situation was that I think the club were trying to rush, QPR were trying to rush me back, and my mind is always to help if I can help.
Yeah.
I need to be back, and it was a bad decision for me to make. I was sort of.
Do you know straight away?
Yeah, straight away. It was the wrong decision. Soon I was there a week, and I thought,
What have I done?
Yeah. So it was really, really difficult. I think just the people that were around Ray, I didn't like, because I obviously knew Ray very, very well. And I think the people that were always around, friends of mine, if they're not good, I would tell you, you know, I would say, I'm not so sure about you or him. That's how I am. So it was disappointing for Ray. And Ray was under a lot of pressure as well, and I was under a lot of pressure to get myself fit. And I was probably, I'm going to be 75% I was at, if that. And it was just about enough, but not enough for me.
Yeah. So did your relationship with Ray change after that then?
Did do, yeah. Because I didn't like what was happening. You know, it comes to everybody. You know, I was 34, 35 years old, and, you know, that's part and parcel of it. Your body breaks down on you, and we've all had it, guys. You know, at the back of your mind, you're saying, I'm not just quite getting there at the moment. And I'm thinking, am I happy with that or what? So.
Was there a bit of you, you know, it said at the start that you always wanted to be better than your dad?
Yeah.
Was there a bit of that when you said, I've got nothing to prove? I've done enough.
You've achieved.
You've done that.
Yeah, I sort of got there a long time before that. I think, you know, playing, winning champion. My dad never won a top-class title, never played for England. So ticked all those boxes, you know.
Did you used to drop that in, tongue-in-cheek?
Depending, yeah. Dad was getting old and, you know, you talk to your dad at different stages of your life, as if you was a, you know, you're thinking he's the same age as you. You know, when it all starts off, you know, we're pretty much close together, and then I think the way you talk to your parents when you get older, it changes dramatically. Mm-hmm. I think.
Moms, it is mad, though. You know, you said you didn't speak for that 8 months. The amount of times in this podcast, you said, my dad always told us to say this, to do that. Still
got that as a kid.
Was it more about making your dad being proud of you, I suppose?
Yeah.
From getting out of that shadow.
Yes, absolutely.
Being your own man.
Being my own man, getting out of the shadow. And sort of, I think he was really happy with the way I'd done it. You know, I'd taken things on board that he'd said and not said. And not taking on things he'd said to me. So it showed him that I was my own man, you know, because I was making my own decisions, but I was still taking on board what he's told me when I was a kid, you know, so...
They're still only the targets that you set yourself, because no doubt if you'd have played in League 1, League 2 all your career, you'd still have been proud of what you'd done. Yeah. But within your own mind, you'd set these targets.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. I think that's what keeps good players at the very, very top. You know, it's a driving force all the time. You need to be the best player. You need to be the... You never think about what you did last week. As soon as you dwell on it for 12 hours and then that's forgotten, you know, and then you're moving forward and you want to be better than that last Saturday, this Saturday coming. That's how I am.
Yeah.
And always been that way.
What happened when you returned to Rangers?
We won the league again. Funny that, eh?
36, 37 of you now?
Yes. It was. It was a couple of years after, I think, 18 months, a couple of years after going down south.
A surprise call?
Absolutely, 100%. I thought somebody winded me up.
Another wind up.
Yeah, I just finished my spell at Leeds and I came back and was, you know, sort of pottering around at QPR. Not enjoying it, and then the phone rang on a Thursday. Long story short, I thought it was either McCoist or Durant winding me up, and were told in none uncertain terms and put the phone down. And then it was my agent. Yeah, so my missus then picked the phone up and she just said, "Yeah, it's Dennis." All right, he said, "I've just spoke to Walter and David Murray, and they want you to go back." And I thought, nanosecond, yes. I was on the plane up there, trained on a Friday, and was on a winning side on a Saturday against Celtic.
When you said you were 75% of QPR, fitness-wise, what were you?
Off the chart when I got back up the road.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was still 75% down, but 200% here.
Yeah, drive.
Drive, yeah, yeah.
I do see another headbutt.
No, not a headbutt.
No,
can I tell you? That's true. Probably I was sent off about, I'm going to say 11 or 12 times in my career, which is a long career and old days and all that sort of stuff. And probably three times, deservedly so, sent off. And that was not one of them. Breaking up, mate. Brian Laudrup having a fight with a centre half. That's how strange that moment was. And I'm putting him apart, and all the players are coming together. And then Charlie Miller actually grabs me from behind and keeps my arms down. And I don't know why he did that.
Is he on your team?
He's on my team. He got me in sort of a hug. And my old man always said, if there's a fight's going to happen and there's a lot of people around, make sure your chin is on your chest, right? So referee stood literally 10 feet behind me. There's a goalkeeper, a young goalkeeper comes running up the pitch. And as he's coming towards me, I'm thinking, I can't get my arms up here. My chin goes down like that and we stop literally that far apart. So I could smell his breath, basically. Yeah, it was that close. But the referee behind me saw me put my head down and thinks a headbutt and send it off. So I got sent off. On that particular
track. Was he just stood there as well, or did he go with the old amateur dramatics? Like, did he go down?
No. He went like that.
And that was enough.
Yeah, that was it. The referee thinks he saw enough for that because he couldn't really see the goalkeeper because everybody was around. He just saw my head go down like that. But Graeme Souness always, we were getting a battering. We were winning 1-0, but we were getting a battering. And Graeme Souness always said to me, if we're in trouble, right, somebody start a fight. Somebody start a punch up or something, have a big tackle because it lifts everybody and it lifts supporters. Right. So literally I rolled my sleeves up, like, got sent off, but sure I shouldn't. And then everything, the whole atmosphere changed again within that group of players. We went down to 10, everybody rolled their sleeves up and the fans were going absolutely ballistic. So
did you get a result?
We won 1-0. And that we won the league basically that day.
The medal
for nine
draw.
In a row. That was nine titles in a row, and so that had equaled what Celtic had done back in the day. So it was one of those moments where You don't really think about it. You make that decision to come and join your football club for the second time. Therein, if that game had gone badly for me, right, and we'd have lost that game, I'd have probably remembered for the guy that came back and we lost 9 in a row.
Yeah.
Whereas what everything that had done before that, 100 plus goals and whatever, with, you know, 11
titles,
11 titles in out of 15. That had all been forgotten. Mm. So I would have been remembered, but I never even thought about that. It was just boom, 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 boom. Mm. We win the league and then we all get drunk again. It was brilliant.
I was just going to say, out of all the changing rooms you've played in, who's been the best wingman? Like going out for a pint the most with?
To be fair, I was never a big drinker. If you're going to say a regular drinking partner would be Brian when he arrived.
Loud, right? Yeah. I didn't expect that.
Yeah. I can imagine just drinking coffee or pot.
No. Listen, that's why Brian did well here. So he just...
I could elaborate on that question a little bit, because we've asked this question a few times. Monaco, we've got Café de Paris, Sunday afternoon.
Yes.
Everybody you've met in and out of football, you can have five... And a Sunday afternoon, 5 here. We'll stick the port behind the bar. We could make it interesting. Pulling a pint.
Bit of holy water.
Yeah.
Borrow his little machine to go on, couldn't you?
We'll stick Brian at the table, but you've got four others that you've
met. I'm actually seeing Brian next week. Yeah. Because he's over for the Copenhagen game. So we're.
Doesn't fancy doing a podcast, does he? We'll get him a drink.
But you could.
Get him a tenant.
Four others at the table that you've met in and out of football. With the names that you've mentioned, it should be some terrible.
Oh, four, five. He misses.
Call it off.
Yes.
Pub's influence.
I'm going to say, Glenn was always good company. I'm going to say any one of the team that I played in at Rangers, you would have. And the late, great Andy Gorham, who was larger than life.
Who are you having? Out of all the people he's mentioned.
Mardini.
Frank Sinatra, so he could...
Frank Sinatra. Frank Bond.
Ed Senna to drive the car from pub to pub.
Yeah, he's just driving us.
I think it would be the best for, like, flick on from a Birds.
Paolo. All day long.
Yeah.
Before he were married, and obviously.
Obviously. Yeah. Obviously.
Ring up and give us a beating corner.
In the corner.
And off we go.
Yeah.
I like your trainers, by the way, joking apart. Where are them belters from?
No, they're just... Is it...
They're refined Italian leather.
Echo? No, I don't know what they are. Yeah, they're comfy. I've had them.
We spoke about everything else on this, haven't we?
Nobody's ever said that to any of the podcast before. I don't like your trainers.
Yeah, sort of nice and comfy. That's it.
No, that was brilliant. Yeah, thank you very much.
Absolutely appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. Who's your favourite manager, quickly?
I'm a guy that looks at everybody, and I am a studier of people. And we've all got bad stuff, but we've all got good stuff as well. And it's the same with managers. Managers, like, for instance, Sir Bobby, he was hopeless at coaching, right? But his personality was incredibly good and funny. He couldn't remember his name most of the time. You know, he said that he picked the phone up once when he was away with England, and it was for Bobby Robson. So he picked it up and he looked over at Brian Robson and he went, "Bobby, this calls for you." Do you know what I mean? He was hilarious. Don Howe made that group work. Wenger taught me one thing, and that was to be on time. That was the only thing he wanted me. I was always literally 2 or 3 minutes late, not McCoy's late, which is half an hour or something like that. And then this was great because he explained it to me. And after 8 weeks, arrived on time, finally, because then I started to make myself early. But what he was doing every time I was late or early or late, he would make me speak French at the front of the bus before the bus left for the stadium. And that's difficult when you're not speaking French. Oh, yeah. So I started being early and he still made me do it. And then he took me to one side and he explained. He said, "This is the only thing I can teach you." He said, "Right? So if you're on the football pitch and you arrive late on a chance, you're going to miss it, right? If you arrive early on it, you're going to miss it. So you have to be on time. And it's the same in life. You have to be on time. And that was his lesson. So pick that up from him. Graham was, your journey, have to look at Graham and that's it. You know, you know what to expect.
Was he a coach?
Eh?
Was he a coach or was he more man-manager?
Man-manager come, yeah. He knew what he wanted. He wanted a team exactly like he was. Yeah.
Hard as fuck.
Yeah. Never pulled out. You had a one warning with Graham. If you miss one tackle, that was your warning, right? You would never play again if you pulled out of another tackle.
Would he rather you be late and get sent off on the second one?
I think Graham was okay with everything. Mm. You know, I think the players that he gathered around him. I speak to Graham a lot. He said to me when he went to Liverpool, he wished he'd taken me with him for the dressing room and saw things out.
You've been on.
Yeah. So you keep it in order. That's why we did well. We had 8-9 leaders in the Rangers dressing room. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes a good team.
Band of brothers.
Yeah, absolutely. So where did that question start there? What were we talking
about? Manager.
Oh, the managers. Oh, yeah. That's
that what you sure? It was a good segue.
See, Bobby Campbell, yeah. One thing he said to me, he said, I want you to be my number 9. And I want you to be nasty with the ball. I don't want you to give the ball away to anybody. It's yours. As soon as we hit you with the ball, it's either going in the back of the net or you're keeping it and passing it to one of us. That's all I want to be, nasty with it.
You took it from there?
Took it from there. And then
never looked back.
Lead home, we had loads of walks and chats. And it was, yeah, he used to take me with Capello once a week when we were not Europe with the goalkeeper. And I'm going to say 200 cones, and just in one half of the pitch, the attacking half of the pitch, he would put the cones down in V's and W's, and he would say to me, walk through. He would walk through to with me with the goalkeeper here, and Fabio would have the ball. Just walk through, see if Paolo's got the ball. This is where I need you to be. I don't want you to be outside this V, and you never want to go into that W. All right, so. Left-handed, right-sided midfield player. This is where I want you to be. Bardi, bardi, blah. And just walk through it. And we did that, I'm going to say, for 6 months. So literally...
Sank in.
And then there was a 12-year-old boy came the same days as me up in Milanello, the same day. And they would practice corners, free kicks and penalties. It was Marco Simeone at 12.
That one in for the egg.
We're just leaving Simeone. Give us one word for Bobby Gould.
Wanker.
Yeah. Solid.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the reason I left Coventry.
Yeah. What did he say? Yeah.
He said, it should be a pleasure for you to come and play for me. That's what he said to me. I went, bye. You're playing for a football club. You're not playing for you.
Yeah.
That's it. And that is the truth of the matter. You play for a football club and the supporters. You don't play for one guy, right? And that's the secret. Manager doesn't pay your wages.
That should have been the word for him. Yeah. Bye.
Hey?
Bye.
Bye. Yeah. Should have been the word for him.
Yeah. You same?
I don't know him. I just know what he said to you.
Yeah.
And
he's an absolute prick.
That's two words, by the way.
Cheers, man. I really appreciate it, Tom. Absolutely brilliant. Thanks a lot. Wow. Names-wise, wow. We said beforehand, didn't we?
I reckon Boris Becker wishes that it had stopped in Monaco.
Beatle we've had as well today.
Oh, Ringo.
Ringo.
Just...
Frank.
I tell you what, it was so flipping.
Who else? We had a bond, didn't we?
Why, we had Roger Moore.
We had Roger.
Roger Moore on and all. In my opinion, is the best Bond.
Yeah, that might be with you though, yeah.
But it's just how like flippant he was with these names that he
kept
dropping.
World, innit? It's a different world. Like I know we mix guests up a bit, but...
What do you think happens, right? You know, like you're in a restaurant and the air and center's in
and you think, oh, come and join me for dinner. Oh, is this an awkward moment when they're like, who's paying? At the end?
Maybe.
Like, Ayrton. But it's going to be an awkward way. It's like...
They're not, do you think you're splitting bill? Like, with four now. Sorry, but did you have a starter? your missus had three cocktails. That's 12 quid, not that off.
Oh, I'm sure 12 cocktails in fucking Monaco is 12 quid. Jesus Christ.
And we only found out this after, obviously, because we filmed McAteer after Hatley, but Hatley was the glue.
The linchpin. Yeah.
They tried to bring Souness and McAteer back together. Interesting.
By the way, moved from Portsmouth, with all due respect to Portsmouth, to AC Milan. And they were at second division, weren't they, Portsmouth?
Yeah.
So it's championship.
Yeah, it weren't like he's going from Man United to Milan.
Yeah.
Portsmouth in second tier English football.
But then I suppose you could look at it, it's a little bit different, but Bellingham going to, because he was doing well in 21s, wasn't he? So Bellingham going to Dortmund.
That is an excellent point, Chris.
It's similar.
That's probably the best point you've ever made.
Yeah.
Where'd you read that?
I didn't. That's out of ear, that.
That's just popped into your
head. Not much goes on or comes out, but sometimes there's a little gem.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Great analogy.
Mm-hmm. You can't do it wrong, can he, Jude?
No.
Oh, he's good, isn't he?
He just goes to the game with his mum and it's just everywhere.
He's living his best life as well, isn't he? Out there, everybody loving him. Mum's doing his washing, probably cooking his meals as well.
But we'll tell you what we'll do. We'll talk about Jude when he comes on there.
Yeah.
So, Mark Hatley, what a fucking episode.
Yeah. I think as well that I felt our energies were a bit low on this one. So no more diets.
Speak for yourself.
Going into...
I was all right.
Yeah, no, I think you were the best performer.
Best of a bad bunch, were you going to say then?
I tell you what, I was furious. We went to that shitty restaurant last night.
Which one was it? Oh,
Wank.
We can speak about that on another... thingy.
Yeah. Another Friday club, yeah. It was wank,
remember?
No.
When she said, would you like to take a picture with your food? And they brought that thing out.
Yeah, we've not talked about that, have we?
Save that for
Friday
club.
Friday clubs are out on Friday. You've not been watching them, which we love advice.
You've not been watching because you can't.
No, you've been listening. Been listening. Yeah,
were you two a bit ratty?
I think we weren't fueling correctly. The energy levels weren't there. I picked it up on listening.
There was two eggs and pomegranate in the fridge.
Yeah, that would be breakfast.
You're on eggs. I weren't eating anything until two. So we can't do that.
No, we're not dieting anymore. Fuck it.
Pull our socks up.
Yeah.
We've got to refuel, lads. We're athletes now.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very
much.
But
yeah, as we mentioned before, the Patreon, links in the description. We didn't mention before the links in the description. If you want to sign up, and there's them 200... extra episodes.
Might be between 150 and 170, but...
Oh, is it? Well, we're getting there. There will be 200 soon enough.
Yeah.
Have the fans ever seen your webbed feet?
They're not webbed. They're just ugly.
But look at the gap
between... You used to say you didn't like calling our listeners and viewers fans, and I noticed you pull it out of the bag all the time.
They changed. Look at them.
No wonder you were good in that pool.
There's not a tree in Barnsley I can't climb with them bastards.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Going around the branches...
Are they opposable, your toes?
Are they what?
Like, can you grip with them?
Of course I can.
Do you know what that's from?
Like a chimp.
Wearing rifts for too long.
Yeah.
That's what happens, because they had their own thingy, didn't they?
Between the years of 1991 and 94, Barnsley tree climbing champion. Honestly, they could not put a birch in front of me. I couldn't speed up.
Best bag of conkers at school.
Oh, aye. Yeah, sorry about them. They're quite offensive, aren't they?
Oh, so I hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next week and Friday Club on Friday if you fancy getting involved.
Live show Thursday.
Live show Thursday.
Thursday, 21st. Steve Walsh. Handsome Steve Walsh.
Fucking echoing here.
We'll see you next week.
See you later. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.